To add this to your list, it is episode 87, and I am Fumi Sumato, joined by my co-hosts Mark J. Parker and Tom Chuba.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, howdy.
How are you guys doing? How has your past couple weeks been?
Good. Things are good. I was I went to a fun Indie Spirit Awards screening party in New York in the city. So, and we'll get into awards a little later, but it was so much fun to. You know, when you're not invited to the actual awards, get invited to a screening party of the awards, and it feels pretty cool. Fumi, you did that
close
you
enough,
did that
right?
For the Oscars one year. Didn't you go to, like, a viewing party? Or am I wrong?
Yeah.
It's still super fun, right?
Yeah,
you kind of feel like...
Free booze and
right?
free food.
You're feeling yourself, you're like...
I mean, if it's free,
oh,
it's
totally.
For me.
The way it was laid out, it just was 1 hour of hors d'oeuvres and wine and everything, but... and then we were moving into the screening room at the Tribeca Film Center. So you best believe I was like, okay, let me down this and let me just get one more to take into the theater. Greg broke a glass.
I'm so disappointed. I was supposed to go with Mark and Greg, but I had puppy issues. After just putting a dog down in August, I was like, oh, universe, don't do this to me again. But he's okay. He's
good,
on the mend. Yeah. But he definitely prevented me from joining my two lovely friends. So next year.
That was a bummer, but it was needed. You should stay. How you been, Foom?
I've been good. Just been working and just enjoying the weekend. I was at like a pastry. I sent you guys a picture this morning. It's Oscar weekend here. And so even though I live smack dab in the middle where like all the parties are, I kind of always forget like every year, like it's Oscar weekend.
Yeah.
And I was driving to the grocery store and like all the tents are set up for like the Vanity Fair Oscar party after.
Ooh,
and...
fun.
Yeah. And there's little pastries at this French bistro with like little Oscar.
So cute.
Like. Frosting and stuff. It's really cute. So yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately a very rainy, cold day in LA.
Is it? I was wondering that today.
Yeah, it's not like the best day to be having to be dressed up and walking a red carpet and like complete like regalia.
Yeah.
So, but you know, they get treated like the basically the A-listers of Hollywood, which they are. So
yeah,
they'll be fine.
And y'all need that rain, so,
yeah.
I mean...
It rains a lot here. I mean, I feel like we had... Yes, we did go, like, 8 years without rain in L.A., but it hasn't been that bad in the last few years.
Mm. Okay.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, rain or shine, the movies gotta win their awards, baby.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get started. We'll start with our housekeeping and headlines. Oh, I did
Wow.
It.
Did you practice?
I didn't.
That was good.
I did not, no. We'll do that before we get into our list and then talk about indies and Oscars.
Yeah, big weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big weekend. All right, so let's start with housekeeping first. I believe that Mark has something that he wants to share.
Yeah, I have a little housekeeping, a little update from something we talked about last year. So if you guys remember, we like to each year kind of dive into a pilot script and kind of break it down and tell people if we think it's going to be a good show. So I had read The Lost Boys CW reboot pilot script. If you remember that, I loved it. I thought it was a great script. I could totally see it being a great show, but it was not picked up for series, which I was pretty surprised by, because that's a title that most people A, know, and B, like, you know? So they just announced last week that the CW is actually doing another pilot order for it. So they've retooled the script. They've let go of all the actors, which is very interesting. So like Tyler Posey, who we know best from Teen Wolf and MTV shows, he was actually in VH1 season 3 of Scream. So he's been around the block. He was in the original cast, but I guess he's been let go. They're totally redoing it. I wonder if they'll go with a different race because they were kind of going for like a Latino vibe. They brought in some different creative people. So we'll see how it goes. But the network definitely wants it to work. So I thought that was interesting that we might still see it, you know, once they shoot this new version. And just to piggyback off the CW news, guys, when I read this, I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember when we were kids? I just know because I would watch it on Saturday nights with my grandmother.
Ugh, my grandfather.
Exactly,
loved
Tom. Exactly.
It.
My grandmom would be babysitting me while my parents were out, and we'd watch Walker, Texas Ranger. And y'all, I had no idea that There is a Walker Texas Ranger reboot coming to the CW with Jared Padalecki in the Chuck Norris role. I mean, sure, cool, I guess, but like that is the last show I thought would come back. But it's not even a pilot. Guys, it's a series order. They love it so much that it's going to be on our TVs, I guess, next fall or next year. So Jared Padalecki as Chuck Norris. Here he comes. Just thought that was fascinating.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I got.
All right, cool. Let's get into some headlines, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, the Super Bowl kind of dominated the news for the since last week, since it aired. So that's been fascinating to me to watch it play out on Facebook. Some people really loved it. Some people really hated it. And we're talking specifically about the halftime show with Miss J-Lo and Miss Shakira. Specifically the halftime show, yeah. What'd you guys think? Because, I mean, everybody had some opinions.
I thought it was fantastic.
I thought it was a true party on the stage. I mean, all those dancers, the singers. I love that J-Lo brought out her daughter to sing with her. I mean, that was a spectacle. And I think I saw it actually got more views than the whole entire show. The ratings for the halftime show were like 105 million views or something. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, did it get more ratings than the actual show?
Yeah, the actual show, I think, got 99 million viewers. And it was like 103 or 4 million for the halftime show, which is sick. Good.
I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
And I didn't think it was vulgar. No. I didn't think any of the shit that all the naysayers are saying. On. I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
They're both sexy, beautiful, amazing women. Like, of course, nothing about it shocked me. Let J-Lo, who is 50 fucking years old, shake her booty in the glitzy little whatever. Do it.
I will say I did say to Jeff while we were watching it, why does she keep grabbing her crotch? And that seemed to be a point of contention for a lot of people. I did notice she was doing that.
She didn't do that excessively.
She did it like four or five times.
Did she do it four or five times, or there just happened to be four or five times the camera was in her crotch? Because yes, there were definite moments of like crotch shot. Wow. Absolutely.
I didn't even notice.
I don't necessarily think that she herself was grabbing her crotch like that.
And was she grabbing it to be sexy, or was she grabbing it to kind of like do what a man does? Because I mean,
I think it was more so like the only time I remember her seeing that was more, I think, right when she like first showed up, when she was on the pole at the very beginning. Yeah. That was the only time I remember her even doing that. Hmm. Other times it was more so camera angles or just the fact that she did have like a G-string type of bodice on.
Yeah.
So like ass shots were there, but I don't really remember seeing her grab her crotch.
I don't either. I just can't stop thinking about Shakira's tongue. Like, that was wild.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
That shot.
Why did she do that?
I said right away, that is going to be a meme.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, I'm going to see that all week long, and I'm ready for it.
Is that like a thing Shakira does? Do we know?
Like that.
It's a cultural thing.
I don't know what it's called, but yeah.
It's part of a Lebanese dance, a dance celebration, and it's supposed to elicit excitement and joy. Mm. And
well, what I loved.
Did you have to look that up, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
How do you know that?
I read it.
Okay.
When people were schooling other people about what the show was and was not, I was like, oh, okay, you learn something new every day.
Well, what I loved about it mostly was it kind of felt like the opening of like the Olympics. Like, it truly felt international. It felt like a whole culture on stage, which you don't always get.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
You get like a lot of rock, a lot of dance, but like that really felt like a full, like I was transported somewhere else, which I was cool with, you know. I liked it.
And Mark, what's your headline?
So my headline, I just heard about this today, y'all, and I am giddy with this news. Okay, so do you guys remember this great movie in the early 90s, we were kids, called The Rocketeer?
No.
Nope.
Oh my God. What? Wait a minute. You guys don't know what that is? You've never seen it?
Not a clue. I saw your note in the doc and I was like,
What? Oh my God. You're just like Greg. Greg had no idea what it was. And literally when he said that in front of my mom on Thanksgiving, when we were showing them my parents' Disney Plus, my mom literally said,
did she gay guess?
Yes, she gay guessed. She's like, you didn't watch The Rocketeer. The Rocketeer was big in my family. Wow. Okay, guys. Y'all need to get on our Disney Plus account and watch The Rocketeer because it is such a good movie. Jennifer Connelly, Billy Campbell, younger, so cute. But anyway, they're bringing it back for a sequel, a direct sequel, not a reboot, not a remake. Disney's bringing it to Disney Plus for a sequel. Not sure yet who's involved, but I just thought that was so awesome because this movie's from 1991. It was not the biggest success back then, but it became a true cult classic. The CGI back then was actually pretty good. This was of, you know, that era of like Jurassic Park. So actually, like, things were looking good back then, even if they were kind of new and a little rough. But I it just made me think it must be doing kind of well on Disney Plus for them to see, you know, that people are interested in checking out this old movie. I guess the sequel has been in the works for a little bit, but it's officially now a go, and they haven't lined up a director yet, but some directors are eagerly like throwing their name in the ring, so we'll see what happens. But wow, okay, well, I'll be the only one geeking out, but I am geeking out over The Rocketeer 2. Y'all need to watch it for real. It's good.
Okay. Sure.
Oh my God. Please watch it. Okay. You'll love it. Fumi, you'll love it. You'll love it. It's like a true comic book movie. You'll love it.
Okay. Okay. Well, my news is the Academy Museum is, for those who don't know, it's this museum that the Academy is building, and they've been building for a very, very, very long time in Los Angeles.
I'm excited about it. I can't wait to come visit you to go.
Yeah, it was supposed to be ready, I think, like 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still getting built. I think details. They had some details, right? I think they had some like an internal issues, and like a lot of like the directors and the head of the Academy like came and went, and they really could never really get anything organized, but whatever. Oh, wow. I think it's supposed to be, knock on wood, be done by 2020. But part of the Academy is basically obviously showcasing like how important film is. And so there was this interesting article that I read in the Hollywood Reporter about their dilemma of what to do with Me Too people in films. So we're talking about like the Harvey Weinsteins. Mm. We're talking about the French man who escaped, Roman Polanski. We're talking about people have had prolific careers in film, but you know, obviously crashed and burned or are very problematic. And so there's this discussion about whether to quote unquote erase them from the Academy Museum. And I personally think that that's a bad idea. It's interesting that you say yes, Tom. I don't. Mark, what do you think?
Sorry. Sorry, I just got a text and I stopped listening. Can you tell me what you were talking about? Sorry.
Are you serious?
Sorry. So sorry. I got a work text and I was like, what? do you mind just going back like 30 seconds?
In the Museum of the Academy, do you agree that people like Harvey Weinstein and Roman Polanski should be erased from any exhibits or educational things that they put there? I said yes. Fumi says no.
It's funny that you guys are on those opposite ends, because I really, that is so tricky. I need time to think about that, because part of me is like, yes, but then I don't know. I mean, those men that specifically we're talking about, like, did major, major accomplishments. So
absolutely. I think it's very dangerous when you start to get into a precedent where you start to ignore or erase people who have done things in history, because one, you never learn from people's mistakes. And if they're just wiped clean and people pretend like it never happened. And two, I think you do a disservice to the other people that were involved in the creation of the work that they were a part of.
Totally.
Just, I mean, it's unfortunate that when you know, Weinstein Company, when you see that name on, if you even see it anymore, on works, that all you do is think about is Harvey Weinstein, because there were a lot of people who had nothing to do with what the horrific actions that he did, who were a part of that, and their work just gets erased too.
Yeah.
But I also think it's really important to understand that, like, there were reasons he got away with doing what he did. And I think once you start to erase the work, you erase the man, which is the point. But then you also erase, you know, the work that went into uncovering what happened and all of the women who had to, like, come out and admit what happened to them. And I think it's a very, very slippery slope when you start to get into that. It's something that really irritates me and bothers me that's even like something that the Academy would even be thinking
of. I think I'm leaning more towards Fumi's side of this. Yeah, I almost feel like let that stuff stay in there and let the customer decide if they want to walk past that section. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. Oh, that's tricky, man. That's tricky.
Tom, did you want to say your points on why you feel like they should erase him?
Well, I just have an example, right? So, like, one of my favorite Roman Polanski films is The Pianist, right? The film that Adrian Brody won the Oscar for about being a piano player during the Holocaust. And I'm thinking, like, you can still do an exhibit, for example, right? Just hypothetically, talking about what a good movie it was and the impact it made on film and on the topic of the Holocaust without ever having to mention who directed it, right? Just as an example.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know. Wow.
Well, think on that, listeners, and let us know what you think. But that's it for Hollywood and Headlines.
All right. What was that noise, Tom?
Yeah.
She goes Hollywood and Headlines.
I was so good from all the episodes.
You were
too.
So good.
You
that
know what?
Hilarious housekeeping and headlines.
It fits this episode. This episode, I feel like, all right, we'll let it slide.
We're all so giddy.
All right, so that is it for housekeeping headlines. Let's get into the list. Okay, listeners, you know it is time for the list. This is the best part of the episode where we tell you what we are watching, what we are loving, what we are hating, the whole gamut. Let's go with Fumi. Why don't you take it away? Tell us what you watched.
Okay, so I've got two things on my list. The first one is the season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, yes, yes.
I love this show. I mean, I feel like it's probably been one of our lists before.
You know what, Foom? I even looked it up. It was wet back years ago during one of our test runs.
Oh, that's so funny. I think that might have been the last time that the show was on, maybe. That's why. For anybody who doesn't know, Larry David has this hilarious series that's on HBO that...
iconic.
It's been 10 seasons, but he kind of just comes and goes as he pleases in terms of, like, doing them. The first, I think, 5 seasons were pretty consecutive, and then after that, he was like, I'll get a holla back at you in a couple years.
I mean, they took a long break.
Yeah, they did.
Like a 10-year
break. Yeah, they took a very, very long break. So that's kind of Larry David's MO. But the new season started, and I kind of forgot. And so I was really excited one late night when I couldn't sleep. And I was like, oh, yeah, Curb's back. So I was able to watch, like, 3 episodes in a row. And it is still just as funny as it ever was. I don't know what genius is behind Larry David. Oh. I mean, he writes all the episodes himself. It's very, very – I mean, it's written in a very interesting way where he doesn't, like, script out the show. It's very, like, he basically gives people, like, an outline and a flow of what he wants. And then people essentially just, like, run with it. And so that's also what makes this show so unbelievably impressive. And so it is just so, so funny. And one of the episodes, I mean, speaking of Me Too.
Oh, my God.
Me Too.
Oh, my God.
And did you watch it?
Oh, my God. Yes. I'm all caught up.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
it was so funny. Like, Larry's on a date with a girl and he's like, I just want your permission to record this because of something that happened earlier to him in the episode.
Yep.
And just, like, him talking about, like, I would like your permission to put my arm around your shoulders near your breast. Not touching, but slightly.
And,
suggesting.
And she was great. She goes, I accept that. Okay.
Yeah. Like,
it's so good.
It's so good. It's so funny.
And his assistant and all the drama there.
Oh, my,
oh my God.
It's so hilarious. It's just... basically all of these moments and situations where women are reading Larry to be, like, predatory, and he legitimately is just like, I just wanted the pigs on the blanket. Like, I was not paying attention to you.
It's so good, guys. Oh, my God.
So good.
You would think by season 10 it's kind of like, meh. No, this what I've seen so far, it is so strong what they're doing.
It is. It is. And so I just, it's obviously an ad. Like, it's just such a good show. It's a series about nothing. So there is no, like, overreaching narrative. Oh my God. I mean, I don't want to spoil everything, but also another funny moment was when Larry's meeting with his lawyer and he wants to go to the
private
bathroom. You guys have to watch it. It's just so stinking hilarious.
He's just always getting himself in trouble, and he can't get out of his own way, and it's so good, man. And
it's such a good show.
And Susie, she just always makes me laugh.
Oh, so great. The whole cast was just fantastic. So watch season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And it's also a great kind of show where if you didn't watch all the previous seasons, like, I kind of jumped in late, can just jump in and, like, you'll figure it all out.
Yeah. I mean, he basically just plays an elevated version of himself. Like, he was the creator of Seinfeld, and that's who he is on his show. So it's really not like Mark said, you don't need to go back and watch it from season one. If you're just a new Curb fan, just jump right in. And so the second thing on my list is a movie that I literally just watched last night, but then rewatched again this morning because last night I was like, what the hell did I watch?
You rarely do
that. I know, but like I was also kind of like, I was very late. I just come back from like a massive like dinner and I was maybe a little tipsy. And so last night when I watched it, I was just like, what? so I watched it again this morning because I was intrigued. Yeah. It's called Horse Girl.
Yeah.
And it just came out of Sundance, and it was written and stars Alison Brie.
Oh, she wrote it?
Yeah, she did.
Oh, shit.
She co-wrote it with the director.
Okay.
It is basically, I don't want to give too much away because I do think that this warrants one of those things where you just kind of go in blind and you watch it and you're just kind of like, huh.
Yeah. Okay. I saw the trailer and I can't, I can't make a, like what it is, make out what it is, you know?
I think that's part of what would make this enjoyable. And then you can, I mean, it makes you think. It's definitely a movie that kind of makes you think. So Alison Brie plays a young woman who might be, maybe not, losing her grip on reality. You know, she is a young woman who seems to lead a pretty lonely life. But she has people in her life, but you slowly, through the progression of the movie, start to wonder what's going on here. And I'll kind of leave it at that. Because I do...
Is it horror?
It's not horror, but it is a little psychological. Like, it definitely is one of those movies where you think it's going to start off, like, happy-go-lucky. Well, maybe not happy-go-lucky, but you think it's going to start off somewhat, you know... okay, or maybe you laugh and then you slowly start to realize like, this isn't funny, this might be kind of sad, is this scary, I don't know. Like, it's definitely one of those movies that makes you think.
Wow. Okay, so overall is, you like it?
Overall I like it. I definitely say add it to your list. It's on Netflix. It literally just came out of Sundance. Like, it was just there last week. So check it out. I mean, honestly, Just go in with an open mind and just watch it. Alison Brie, I will say her acting is really great. She's very strong in this film.
Her career path has been interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
It's
been subtle.
I think I like her. I'm still kind of on the fence.
Yeah, I generally do.
She's a strong actor, for sure. Yeah. And I didn't realize she co-wrote it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and
she did.
I'm looking online. The Duplass brothers produced it.
They are the executive producers.
Wow, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so definitely check out Horse Girl.
Horse Girl. All right. Cool. Tom, what do you have for us?
All right. Well, since Fumi started with the Sundance, I'll continue with the Sundance. I checked out recently Miss Americana, which was the buzzed about Taylor Swift documentary that premiered at Sundance and then very shortly after premiered on Netflix.
I think we all have seen this. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Have we?
Yep.
Okay, cool. We've all seen this. I'm going to say, guys, it's an add this to your list. I liked it. I thought it was insightful. It taught me a lot about Taylor that I didn't know. Taylor Swift is an interesting personality to me. I don't particularly love her. I don't hate her. She's kind of somewhere in the middle for me. I've often said, because my husband Jeff really, really loves her, but I've often said that I don't know who she is as a person. And that's something that's always kind of bugged me about her. But I think this documentary finally answered that question a little bit for me. Now, I will say that some of the critiques of the documentary is that it feels a little too calculated, like a little too scripted of a documentary. Like they almost went through an outline.
Absolutely.
I will say that's a fair criticism. She definitely wanted to get a message out there. She wanted to get I'm lacking words here.
She wanted to kind of control the narrative a little bit.
Yeah, she wanted to control the narrative and give a perception. That's it. Perception is the word I was looking for. She wanted to get a certain perception of herself out there.
Which is really interesting because I feel like that's part of the problem with Taylor, right? Like, that's part of a massive issue people have with Taylor. So it was interesting that she decided to go that route with her documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, I totally agree with you, Foon. But I think overall it works here. She's a really good person. She is a lot like anybody else and has really big ups and really big downs.
I definitely
in
did
life.
Not know she kind of had just, like weight issues and like was so
all of that stuff was new to
that
me.
That was really interesting to get that deep and dark, you know. She looks at a picture of herself and she just won't eat. Like, wow. Yeah.
You guys didn't think she had weight issues when she was, like, really thin and she was all about, like, her girl squad? You guys didn't notice that?
I guess I don't follow
her enough honestly, to have noticed that. You know what I mean?
I didn't really notice it either. I figured, of course, she's on a strict, like, diet and all that. But, like, I don't know. I guess I just didn't think there was a problem, you know? But I'm glad that whole squad shit is over because that was weird, you know? That was. Yeah. Looking back at it, that was so strange, guys. That was, like, so strange. But I did like it. I think the best scenes are honestly when she's recording, when she's coming up with the lyrics.
Totally
when
agree.
When she has Panic at the Disco guy, Brendan Urie there. Like, that was cool. Like, all the behind-the-scenes stuff with her and her producer, that was fun and thrilling. And
I absolutely agree, Mark. Like, I would watch an entire series if all it was just watching her create music. That was fascinating.
Yeah, it really was.
See, that stuff to me felt like, I feel like you could have cut 15 minutes out of that documentary. Oh. It dragged just a little bit for me. And I felt like it focused too much on that stuff. I don't know.
Oh, that's funny.
I thought it was interesting. They definitely talk about her feud with Kanye, which honestly, like, going back to that moment when he got on stage and took over the mic, that was truly, I mean, we already know this, but, like, just to rewatch it again in the context of the doc, that was truly fucking devastating what he did to her. That is so twisted.
Yeah.
But then it was interesting. They didn't bring up, like, other feuds that she got into. Like, with Katy Perry, that was, like, a big, stupid feud. Like, so it was, I sort of see what you mean, Tom, where I feel like they were picking and choosing certain things to highlight when there were some other things that it's like, well, what about that, you know?
Yeah, and the stuff with her mom is definitely really genuine, I felt. Mm-hmm. And this, my favorite scene was the scene where she decides to tell her parents that she's definitely going to come out as someone who supports the Democratic Party, and how her dad was kind of worried. No. And I was like, well, wait, is it because he's a Trump supporter? Is it because he's Republican? Or is he really worried about her?
Still?
That's a good question.
I believe they are. I believe they are.
I was a little confused by the documentary because it made it seem like they lived separately or something.
And that scene when, like, mom is next to her and then they're talking to dad and, like, part of the people on her team and they're kind of arguing about that, like, I felt very little love between mom and dad.
Absolutely.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
It was very disconnected. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay.
My only issue with the political stuff, and this will kind of always, I guess, be Taylor's issue, is I love that she finally did get political and is totally, you know, pro gays and women and all that stuff. And I love seeing her get, like, you know, really inspired by all that. But then when it shows her, like, at the MTV Awards and she won and she's like, everyone go vote. And, like, she puts on that, like, cool vibe. And she's, like, so now all about go out and vote. Like, this, you know, it just kind of feels like, you literally just started doing this. Can you just ease into it? Like, that was just my only issue. You know what I'm saying?
Like, not be so pretentious about
it. Yeah, like, can you just admit to everyone, like, hey, guys, yeah, like, I'm really late to this political game, but it's important to me, so now I'm going to focus on it. But can you not add the sass just yet? Because, like, you just got to the party.
It does. It makes it seem like she thinks that just because she tells her fans to go do something, that she thinks that she's going to make a massive difference, which, unfortunately, she didn't, because we all know that Marsha Blackburn weren't. And
she was devastated by that.
She was, but Marsha made note to mention that, I guess, your little, you know, with Taylor Swift, like, I guess your little political activism couldn't get you over the hump. So it's just kind of like, if you're going to put yourself out there in that way, i.e. Taylor, with, like, telling your fans to go vote, I love it. I think that's great. I wish you would have been doing it from the beginning, but whatever, each his own, you come in your own timeline. Yeah. But, you know, like you said, Mark, like, it's okay for you to share that information, and it's okay for you to, like, push young people to go do it, but maybe just, like, relax on your delivery.
Yeah, maybe don't make it so badass cool. Like, you literally just started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know. But overall, yeah, I agree, Tom. Good doc.
Yep. So that's Miss Americana. Second thing on my list is AJ and the Queen, which is RuPaul's new scripted Netflix series. So it is about a drag queen who lives in Manhattan. She is very successful in the nightclub scene, right? It performs at this very big, huge club where confetti falls at night, at midnight and everything, and all that good stuff, all that flashy good stuff. And he decides to he's going to leave Manhattan and he's going to open up his own club in Queens. With his boyfriend, who he's been dating for about 6 or 7 months. Turns out the boyfriend is scamming him. Mm-hmm. and robs him of everything that he has saved in order to start that club. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he discovers that there is a child in his building who has been abandoned by their mother. And the child is pretty much, you know, homeless on the streets, begging for money. And so he decides to kind of take that child in, or kind of figure out what the heck is going on with that child. That's the first episode. I know that sounds very vague, but that's as far as I've gotten, because I'm going to say that it's an okay to miss.
Totally agree.
Oh.
Right, Fumi?
I mean, I watched the same episode Tom did, and I was just like, okay.
Oh, no.
I
haven't watched it yet.
A for effort.
Yeah.
A couple issues. RuPaul is unfortunately not a very good actor, in my opinion, when he is outside of drag. The show felt very old to me. Like, I don't know. It's the way it was shot, the way it was written, it just felt like it was kind of stuck in the late 90s, early 2000s. Foom, did you get that vibe too? It just felt like outdated.
It's interesting. I didn't, there was something off about it for me, but not until you say what you say that I think that clicks for me, and that's what it is, because I felt like I was watching like a weird, like, after school, like, movie kind of thing. I don't know. It just felt a little strange. And I was like, this is interesting. Because it's so crazy. Because Drag Race is so so out of the box and so hilarious and so, like it's just on it. It's so different from Drag Race. And I think, unfortunately, I don't know if this is, you know, I mean, RuPaul has been around for so long, but maybe I just was expecting of a Drag Race caliber, and AJ and Queen is just not that, unfortunately.
And judging by the trailer, it almost seems like drag queens from Drag Race will be on the show. Are they maybe not in episode one, but they like sprinkle?
No, there are drag queens from Drag Race in episode one, but they don't like.
Yeah.
They don't stand out. I mean, it's Rue show.
Yeah.
It's definitely like Rue show.
I also felt like it doesn't know what it wants to be. And you know, the lines between drama and comedy have blurred. Dramedies are very popular today, and they can be done very well. But this doesn't know what it wants to be in a bad way. You know what I mean? Like, are you trying? Because there are some heavy themes that it's trying to explore, at least in the first episode. And they just fall flat. You don't know if you're supposed to laugh at things or feel pity or feel sad. I don't know. There was just a lot about this show that did not work for me in that first episode. So I'm going to say it's an okay to miss.
Wow, sad.
How many episodes is it? Did you pay attention?
Ten
half hour.
And they were half hours, yeah.
No, they're all an hour?
Oh, that's weird.
Oh,
yeah, the first episode is 52 minutes.
Oh, that's
strange.
Every episode is an hour?
Yes, because I went and checked that, too, because I was like, oh, this could be like a half-hour thing. I'll get through, you know, a season in two weekends.
Oh. No.
So I was like, maybe if it was a half-hour, I would have stuck out a little more to see, but I was like, an hour each? No,
maybe that's the issue, Tom.
Yeah.
We're trying to fill in that time, because obviously that's like an hour, because it's Netflix, so it's not...
Yeah, it's not...
They're not talking about commercials.
It's not 40 minutes. It's like, wow. I definitely thought when I saw that trailer, I was like, oh, that's a cute half-hour, like, sitcom, you know? Wow, guys. Okay, so you both say okay to miss. Okay.
Yeah.
I might check out the first episode and let you know. That is a bummer. Oh, man. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, how interesting.
And I know I was very vague and I stumbled a little bit in my synopsis, but it's because there are some things that I don't want to give away for people who do want to check out the show.
Okay. So. Are there some surprises?
Sorry for that inarticulation, but I think I got the point across.
Yeah. Are there some surprises that kind of happen in the first episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. But how interesting. Even though Foom did have a Netflix item, Tom had two Netflix items on his list. He is the Netflix nerd.
Watch out, girl. I'm coming for you.
Are you really?
Oh, gosh. Okay, break it up. All right, ladies and gents, it's my turn. It's my turn. And now I have two items to chat about. And the first one is the new CW show, Katie Keen, starring
Never heard of it.
What? Tom, I swear, you must...
Is this with Lucy Hale?
Yeah, cute as a button Lucy Hale, even though, I mean, I don't want to judge anyone, but I do feel like she's plumping those lips a little too much, but she looks great. She's super cute.
Yeah.
This is with Lucy Hale, and it's so funny. Isn't it crazy? Like, I always think this is weird when, like, a certain person's career, like, the synergy is just out of this world. Like, how funny. She has a new show that comes out this month. She's about to have... as of this recording in a few days, the big horror movie Fantasy Island at the same time. Like, yeah. It's just wacky to me when, like, things like that happen. So right now she's having a moment.
They keep trying to make her happen, though.
I know. She's...
Isn't this her, like, third or fourth CW show since Pretty Little Liars ended?
Right, because she was Pretty Little Liars. She was in a show called Life Itself, maybe in the last year or two on CW, that crashed and burned after a couple episodes. So, yeah, they've definitely been trying to really make a vehicle for her, but... Let me tell you about Katie Keene, because I think this is that vehicle, y'all. Okay. So Katie Keene is actually a spinoff from Riverdale. It's part of the Archie comics. So Katie Keene is an Archie comic book character, along with a few other characters that are in the show, including from Riverdale, Josie McCoy. She is Josie and the Pussycats. So if you guys watch Riverdale, I talked about that a while ago on the show. I'm super behind on that show, but I do love it. Josie was very supporting on Riverdale. Cute actress, great singer, but like not the most exciting storyline. So I think they figured this was a good way to kind of beef up her character a little more. So she and Lucy Hale star in Katie Keene. It's not set in Riverdale. It is in New York City. And boy, this might be to date the most visual, the most beautiful CW show. I don't even care if you're totally not into it. I do recommend watching at least the first episode to see how beautiful TV has gotten. Because the CW has always been very shiny, very pretty, lots of pretty people, lots of pretty sets. But Katie Keene is like on a different level. The first shot, I literally said, and I was by myself in the living room, I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Is it like to the Maisel level? Because I think Maisel's a beautiful show.
Maisel is, of course, stunning. Okay. And honestly, Katie Keene is coming for that New York City Maisel. Keene is like Maisel meets Sex and the City. A little more Sex in the City. But Katie Keene, it's four friends, three girls, one boy, played by Johnny, I'm going to butcher his name, Beauchamp? I met him a long time ago through a mutual friend. He was also in Penny Dreadful. He's a great actor. He is a drag queen. And so it's so fun to see on the CW these beautiful drag outfits and performances. It's a very musical show, which is really fun. But Katie Keene follows Lucy Hale's character. She is a fashion legend to be. She's a designer and she works for Lacey's. Supposed to be Macy's or like a Bloomingdale's or, you know, a Saks. She works and works her ass off in this beautiful, you know, clothing store, you know, thing in New York City. The shots of New York look beautiful. It's very Sex in the City that way. It's like these friends are just trying to survive. It's a little more realistic than Sex in the City. But then again, the group is all in their young 20s, like, you know, kind of fresh out of college. They're really struggling and pounding the pavement. Sex and the City, those women were a little older. But they actually live like way uptown, which is nice because I feel like on so many New York City shows, oh, they happen to have a nice apartment on 57th Street. No, these girls, it shows the Little Red Lighthouse, which is such a cool place if you ever go in real life. And that's way uptown, like 180th Street. So it actually has a little bit of reality. There is also quite a bit of fantasy. And I mean, like, how funny, Josie McCoy comes to New York and she meets a woman singing on the streets and she sings and then, oh my God, she falls in love with a record label exec. I'm like, Jesus Christ, people. There's a lot of perfect, you know, Hallmarky moments like that, but just suspend your disbelief, just go with it. It's cute. It's funny. I would say add this to your list. Now, is it a show I'm going to watch every episode of? I'll be honest. No. However,
won't you be lost with the narrative, though?
Nah, I don't think so. I think, you know, you can kind of figure it out. Yeah, like, I'll pop in here and there because it is beautiful. I love that her guy friend, Jorge / Ginger Lopez, is not only a drag queen. He is desperate to get on Broadway, but he's a little too femme to play the masculine roles. And so he's got this really interesting problem that he's working on. The friends are all really cute, really fun. Of course, it's a CW, so literally the first straight man that you see is full of abs and muscles and in the tightest black underwear. So I'm like, CW, you know, at least you always get something right. So is this a show I will watch every week? Honestly, no. But I'm telling you, even if this is not your cup of tea, just check out the first episode and have a good time. You see Mary Beth Peel, who is Grams in Dawson's Creek. I think she's a recurring character, which is super fun.
That bitch is still alive?
Yeah, she does. Oh, she has a lot of Broadway. God. Oh, yeah. She's in it. It's fun to see her. You'll see, oh my God, I want to say her name is Helene York from one of my favorite shows of last year, The Other Two on Comedy Central. She's got some fun, bitchy stuff to do. It's kind of like the new Gossip Girl, but a little more cute, not so, you know, like, okay, twisted. So that's Katie Keene. Add it to your list. I'm curious to see what you guys all think. I mean, no matter what, it's fun to put on the background and just let your eyes zone out and just look at pretty things. My second item, totally different on the other side of the spectrum. I have the new Amazon film. It just came to Amazon just a couple days ago. Honey Boy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. It's,
oh, exciting.
It's now on Amazon, so go stream it. I say it's definitely worth a stream. Add Honey Boy to your list.
Mm-hmm.
So you,
I heard really great things.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I liked it a lot. I don't know if I loved it. Like, I don't know. This might be borderline one and done, but I don't mean that in a bad way at all. It's a tough movie. I got emotional. This is written and stars Shia LaBeouf. It is not funny in any way. This is tough. This is a script he wrote actually in rehab, I read a couple days ago. He wrote this in rehab as part of his, I guess a few years ago. I forget exactly when he was last in rehab, but we all know he's had his troubles. I've always honestly liked him as an actor. I think he is great in comedy and thrillers and action. I mean, no matter.
I used to think he was so hot.
Oh, I mean, oh, for yeah.
Yeah,
during like
too.
Some of those Transformers movies, I was like, oh, damn, Shia. Okay. So yeah, he kind of walks that fine line between like kind of hunk and goofy. And so I've always kind of liked him. But so this movie really shows his troubles. He plays his father, which is really interesting.
He plays his real life father?
Yes, Shia plays his real life dad. So the movie is based on his life. Noah Jupe, who is the cutest kid, he was at the Spirit Awards that we'll talk about later. He's already so grown up, it's crazy. He was in A Quiet Place. He was just also in Ford versus Ferrari. He plays Shia at like age 10, 12, where they live in a motel. And I'm pretty sure like all of this is real. They live in like a motel in, I want to say it was either Florida or Hollywood. It's kind of the same because of all the trees. But, like, they are barely scraping by because dad sort of, like, just takes Shia's money and is abusive. And mom and dad are divorced. Oh, yeah. This movie explains to you why Shia has, you know, some issues. Lucas Hedges, who is great, he plays older Shia, like, in his early 20s at the height of his fame and height of his major issues, and so there's some tough stuff there. So the movie kind of goes back and forth between Noah Jupe, you know, Shia at age 10-12, and then Shia at like 22 in rehab, really struggling. And it's good. FKA Twigs is in it. You'll see a few familiar faces pop up in every now and then. But yeah, it's emotional because the best scenes are with Shia. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, the best scenes, even though he's maybe a little young, he's around our age. He's like early to mid 30s. Even though he might be a little young to play his real life father, he's got the hair. He's got this way of speaking. And Honey Boy was Shia's real nickname from his father. His father would call him Honey Boy. But you see how his dad honestly meant well, but just was screwed up from war and, you know, cheated on his wife and just was, his father couldn't get out of his own way. And so his father would like cause scenes on set and yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. It's tough, guys, but watch it. I really, and now, especially that it's on Amazon, it's absolutely worth a watch to stream. There's some really special stuff here. And I do wish it was nominated for a few awards at the Spirits. And I do wish it won one, because I think it was pretty special. Tom, did you get a chance to watch it? Cause I know, oh, okay.
Not yet. No, I
yeah,
want to.
Yeah,
though.
Cause I know you also got the screeners, but and yeah, it's directed by Alma Harrell, one of the few female directors, unfortunately, of the year that was getting a lot of recognition. And this was her first narrative feature debut. She actually comes from documentaries, and it's beautifully shot. And like I said, it'll make you a little emotional. I got a little emotional because there's so much pain and anger and fucked up shit. I mean, he's smoking cigarettes at 10 years old. He's getting himself to sets when his dad is too drunk to wake up. Like, but
are you kidding?
Oh,
wow,
yeah.
I'm totally shocked.
Yeah.
I did not realize that was his life. That's so sad.
And I heard somewhere, I forget exactly where, but I did hear Shia got his dad's permission to write about him by saying he got, I want to say it's Mel Gibson to play him in this movie, which was a total lie. Shia was going to play him. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, it's tough. So watch it, but you know, you're gonna squirm a little bit because it's tough what this boy kind of went through, and he grew up fast, you know? So check out Honey Boy on Amazon. It's worth a watch for sure.
Nice.
And so that is it, everyone. So that's our list. Just to recap, we had Curb Your Enthusiasm Season 10 on HBO. Watch it, add it, mm-hmm. get on it. Horse Girl mm-hmm. on Netflix is an ad, followed by also on Netflix, Miss Americana, the Taylor Swift doc. We all, I think, pretty much, mm-hmm. we pretty much liked it. That's an ad. But unfortunately, Netflix had an okay to miss with AJ and the Queen, and I'm so sad to say that. Sorry, Rue. I need to watch Rue on SNL. I haven't watched SNL yet, but everyone's raving about it on my social. And then we wrapped it up with Katie Keene on the CW. I say add it to your list, and Honey Boy on Amazon. Add that one, too. Nice. Yeah, there you go.
Good, cool. Well-rounded list.
Yeah, a good list, everybody. Yeah. Oh, and Foom, real quick, I have to tell you, Greg and I finished Cheer, and yeah. Oh, yeah. So good. Give them every Emmy. I mean, that
I know.
That finale. Yeah. Oh yeah. Loved it. So. And without further ado, Tom, do you want to lead us down the red carpet?
Well, if you're living under a rock, you probably haven't heard. But if you're outside of a rock, like the rest of us, then you know that this was quite the weekend for Asians and Asian film. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the Indie Spirit Awards, because we had the Indie Spirit Awards on Saturday, and then we had the Oscars on Sunday. Indie Spirit. Now, these awards this year, for whatever reason, looked very different from the Oscars, the nominations mm-hmm. and the awards. Mm-hmm. The Farewell, Awkwafina's breakout hit, won Best Feature. Yeah. Renee Zellweger did win Best Actress for Judy. But Adam Sandler won Best Actor for Uncut Gems, and the Safdie brothers were awarded Best Director. Mm-hmm. And then Xuzhen Zhao, she was kind of a surprise pick for Best Supporting Actress. And then finally you had Willem Dafoe winning Best Supporting Actor for his crazy, wacky performance in The Lighthouse. Now, Mark, you went to the party, so do you want to talk a little bit about the Indie Spirits?
Yeah, it was really fun. It was a good time. And I, as you guys know, and I've talked about this on the podcast, I love the Indie Spirits. It's a show that I feel like is truly really not boring. And it could totally be boring because a lot of these movies are so obscure, but it always moves, and it's a great mix of talent. And it's nice to see movies like The Farewell, The Lighthouse, and then like Booksmart. So it's a mix of all kinds of movies winning. But yeah, the crowd was definitely, I think the crowd was thinking J-Lo was going to win, as was I, as was J-Lo, I think. She seemed a little perturbed. But you know, that grandmother from The Farewell really was so special. I am surprised.
She's so cute.
I love her, but I am surprised the movie won Best Feature. That was sort of an upset, I thought. What do you guys think?
What were you expecting to win?
I just figured it was going to be Marriage Story or Uncut Gems, but I was actually really thinking Marriage Story was going to take this. I was not expecting The Farewell. Maybe I like The Farewell, but I didn't find it that amazing. But
yeah, I don't know if it's Best Picture worthy.
Yeah, so that was, it was a great surprise, but I just thought it was going to go to Marriage Story, which I really did love. So, you know, but yeah, Asians rocked the weekend, because Tom, why don't you now tell us?
Yeah, because Parasite and Bong Joon-ho both won Best Picture and Best Director, and then Parasite also won Best Original Screenplay mm-hmm. at the Oscars. It was nominated for 6 awards, and it won 4 in all. So it did really well, and this is the first time in history in the 92 years that the Oscars have been around that a foreign film has won Best Picture.
About damn time.
Mm-hmm. What about you guys? I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. You guys had seen it before me. You raved about it. I watched it. And even with the hype, oh my God, I fucking love that movie. And I'm so happy. And it seemed like the crowd was genuinely so happy for that group.
Totally.
You know, and they had won a few awards. Like the SAG win was kind of a nice surprise when they won Best
Ensemble. Yeah, I think that was the first hint that it could be a real player.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting because I think wasn't the most nominated movie was Joker? And then 1917, and those won a couple, but The Irishman, no wins.
Shut out.
And I'm kind of okay with
it. What is going on, Marty?
I know.
Poor Marty. But I did love when Bong Joon-ho accepted his director? And then he shouted out Marty Scorsese. So I think that was fantastic. Director.
Yeah, that was very sweet. There was a lot of Marty love. There was a lot of Quentin love. Yeah.
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 What did you guys think of the show overall? So ratings-wise, it did not do well. This is the lowest ratings ever for the Oscars.
Wow.
I don't know.
It was only
here's
what,
my
like
take.
23
I've
million?
Got three words. I've got three words about the Oscars. Too damn long. even when they go without the host, which I loved last year and worked really well last year. It worked a little less well to me this year for some reason. I don't know why, but it still was just like too long because you had people, you had presenters introducing presenters who were going to introduce other people, and it was like Anthony Ramos introducing Lin-Manuel to introduce Eminem, which we'll get to in a second, but like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell?
There was a lot of like, it was like a Russian doll of presenters. It was like, hello.
That's
hello.
A good analogy.
Right?
That's a good one, I thought that the award show was very long, but I'm used to it at this point. I feel like the Oscars are pretty standard, going to be about 3.5 hours long. That's pretty much kind of how their trajectory is. I'm not surprised that it went, that this is a lower rated season. I think that that's just what we're going to keep seeing, unless they have a host that everybody wants to see, or for some reason it's a year where everybody just loves all of the movies that got nominated. But I'm pretty sure that this is going to be the trajectory of how it goes.
I agree, Foom. I think the Oscars now are just naturally going to be one of the lower rated award shows.
Totally.
Well, it's funny because the Globes are falling every year, too, so maybe award shows in... I think the Grammys were even low this year. I think I could be wrong on that.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, though, I mean, this is just across the board, but a lot of people watch it on streaming. Like, I don't have cable. I watch it on my streaming. So are those numbers being accounted for? Because then who knows what the real numbers actually look like.
I think they're being accounted for, but oh my God, I was watching it on Hulu, and I started an hour late because I was, like, doing laundry, I was showering, and I thought, let me just fast forward through the commercials. Oh, my effing God.
I did not know that you could watch it on Hulu. Do you have Hulu Live?
Oh, yeah. I have Hulu Live TV. That's what we have now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I like it because you get the whole library of Hulu stuff as part of your thing for like $55 a month. But, oh, my God, everyone, I scream so loud when at 9 o'clock we get ready to press play and it says it's not recording. And, oh, my fucking God, I was livid and I said, I can't do this streaming cable shit.
Yeah.
But luckily we were able to add it to our list add it to our DVR and just by doing that, add it to my stuff, then we were luckily able to have access to the previous hour, because you know I needed to see my Brad Pitt winning, I needed to see Janelle Monáe slay the opening,
absolutely,
you know, so thank God
loved it
out.
But guys, did that opening really need to be 6 minutes and 34 seconds? I don't know.
Tom, you are sure such did. You are such a time ho,
sure,
okay.
Did.
You were such a time ho. I love that opening. And as we were saying offline, I love the weird, like, there was us, there was Midsummer. I love Janelle wearing the Midsummer flower dress. The Dolomite. Like, I loved it. It was, like, a lot of the more, I don't want to say weird, but, you know, a little more underground, under the radar movies.
Yeah, underground.
So she was trying to make it a statement about we can have more well-rounded films. There were a lot of films that came out, as you just mentioned, that should have been recognized in some shape or form and just weren't, you know?
Yes, and I thought that was a bold move to show those movies at the start of the show. Like, that was pretty bold, you know?
Totally.
But
what did you guys think of the speeches?
Well,
I thought they were all boring.
I have to say that I thought the speeches were a little weird. I feel like nobody was prepared. I didn't understand what Renee was saying.
I know.
Oh my God. Like, she just kept saying,
I don't think she understood what she
was
saying.
Over and over and over again. Like, girl.
I know.
Girl.
I got the feeling that especially those main four actors that have literally won every award this season. I mean, this season there was not a surprise like Olivia Colman last year. These four actors took every goddamn award. Good for them. Well deserved. But come on. I think they, like, honestly just got tired. I think they're like, oh my God, is this marathon over? Because I have nothing else to say. You know, like Renee.
Especially with such a condensed season.
Yeah. Maybe that is it, because it was like literally something every
that's
weekend.
A good point.
You're right. Maybe every weekend they're like, what am I going to say to differentiate my speech? But, you know, listen, I overall did love the show. I think because this year actually was a great year for movies. I feel like overall the noms were all pretty, I shouldn't say diverse, but at least different kinds of movies and, you know, a kind
diverse
of
by genre. Yeah.
Yeah. Diverse by genre, diverse by size. You know, and I like that for the most part, except for The Irishman, pretty much every, like, kind of bigger movie got one award, which was nice. Like,
even Little Women with the costumes.
Little Women, costumes, Bombshell makeup, you know, Ford versus Ferrari taking some of those technical.
Yeah.
I like it when it's kind of spread across and there's not just one or two movies just every other time, you know?
What were some of her standout favorite movie moments? Because I loved Rebel Wilson and James Corden being dressed up as cats.
Yes.
That was super funny.
But even that felt like three swats too long. Like, we got it. Like,
okay.
That thingy life.
I also loved Olivia... oh my God, Coleman, Olivia Coleman coming out to give her speech. And she was like, last year was my husband's night of the year.
Yeah.
I was like, why is she so damn funny? I just
She's so cute. She's so cute. But no, there were, I feel like the presenters, I know what you mean, Tom. There was a lot of like young Hollywood introducing like bigger stars, introducing like actual people that are going to do something. So I get it. But I did feel like this was a nice crop of presenters. Like, you had Diane Keaton and Keanu Reeves, the duo we didn't know we needed. You had like Sigourney, Queen Sigourney with Gal and Brie. You had, oh my God, dream team. Please, Maya. Please let Maya and Kristen just fucking host this thing next year. Please.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I also loved
Although Will. Billie Eilish was not filling it.
Well, Billie Eilish was making faces
she
all night.
She is so weird. She makes really faces at everybody. She's got to stop that because, I mean, if she's not a meme already, she's going to be, and like people are going to be like, girl, what is your problem?
She's a meme, yeah.
I did like her In Memoriam performance, though, because I really, I did not know that was going to happen. I didn't know why she was there. I figured she just got an invite because she just won a Grammy, and they're like, hey, we have...
Not only was she there to sing that, I think they basically let her choose the song she was going to sing and let her sing whatever she wanted.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people thought she was there to sing the new James Bond song.
Because
she recorded the song for the new James Bond movie.
Well, we all know she's going to be there next year nominated. I mean,
I know. And she'll probably win.
Oh, my God. That'd be crazy. But
because everyone wins that day for that damn movie.
oh, always, right? Always. James Bond, it's like a no-brainer. But, yeah, she made some faces. But I did like her performance. I think it was weird that Luke Perry and a few other names were left out. I kind of feel like their explanation about that wasn't even a real explanation.
Well, tell people what their response was.
It was literally... It was like literally just like, yeah, there's like a representative from each of the branches and we just sort of decide who's in the show and who's not. But everyone who's pitched to us, who passed away this year, is on the Oscar website. How many of y'all are going to Oscar.com?
I know.
I don't think any of you are going there. So I just feel like, and especially as we've said, like Luke Perry was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I mean... I don't know. That felt a little weird, but, you know.
I got to tell you what else was super weird for me. One of my least favorite moments of the night was Taika Waititi's speech. Like, you just won a major award, a very prestigious one, and you stand up there and make a fool out of yourself for a movie that is very endearing, very beautiful, very understated, and, like... Come on, you were projected to win. You couldn't at least get your shit together and just make some... A half-coherent speech? I don't know. Did you guys notice how weird that was?
Oh, yeah. It was a little off.
It was definitely weird, but I think he actually realized he sounded like a complete fool because he made a statement afterwards about how, you know, at least his mom was, like, proud of him or something.
Oh.
With the awards. I mean, he just sounded utterly... dumb.
I think
ridiculous.
Maybe he really was shocked and then tried to be funny and charming, but then didn't like how that was sounding.
It didn't come out cross.
Yeah, it was weird for him because he's normally pretty cool. Yeah. But what about the performances? I know Fumi has a thing. She does not like Oscar song performances. Mm-mm. I love them. No. I feel like it's a way to break up the monotony. But I liked a lot of them. I thought Idina Menzel with all the Disney princesses from around the world was really special.
You guys want to hear a secret?
Oh, God.
I don't think Idina Menzel can sing, and I don't understand.
You think she screams?
I think she has the most whiniest of singing voices, and I don't understand why she's, like, a thing musically.
Interesting. Okay. I kind of see what you mean. It's a little whiny, but, oh, gosh, when she belts those notes, I am a little white girl giggling and peeing my pants.
I love it,
so... I don't know, but I...
What about Eminem, guys? What about that performance?
God.
Random party of one now seating, like...
I don't get it. I don't understand why he was there. I don't understand why he sang that song. Like, I get he didn't appear the year he got one for it.
But that was his choice.
Yeah, that was his choice.
Bashed
the awards.
Live with your consequences.
And, like, come on. Like you were saying, Tom, the show runs so long, which, yeah, we know it, we expect it, but come on, you're going to stop the show in the middle of all these current performances and current awards to sing a song from a movie that didn't even come out during, like, a special... This isn't, like, a milestone anniversary. It came out, like, 17 years ago.
Yep.
Like, so we're really going to spend time doing this? We're already spending so much time on these montages, especially the music montage of, like, famous songs in movies that some of them weren't even actually nominated for an Oscar. So it's like, what are we doing? Let's just get to what's current.
And he did the whole damn song. Oh, it wasn't even like he sampled it.
And
like,
the crowd, you could tell the crowd was confused. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But that's the best part of that performance. The reactions from the crowd who were like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Right. And then all of a sudden, then their heads start bopping. And then they're like, okay, I'm just going to like. And every
like listen. 4 minutes later, they're like, is this over yet?
Yeah. Right. Oh, man.
Did anybody follow what went on at the after parties?
Yes. Ooh. That's what I want to talk about. Can we talk about how I need to get to the Vanity Fair Asuka party and the exclusive party that Beyonce and Jay-Z throw? Like, hello. Ooh. I was reading that Chrissy Metz got to the Vanity Fair after party and she like just stopped as she was walking in because she was in complete awe of like the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. It just, well, can it we talk so about, I had no idea. Fabulous. I had no idea Chrissy Metz could even sing. I didn't know she could sing. Did you guys? You watched This Is Us.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
She sings a little bit on This Is Us, so.
Yeah. Oh. She wants to, she's her whole character. It's like, wants to be a singer.
Because she's like, she wants to be her mom.
Oh, interesting. I had no idea. More. So I knew she was in that movie, which isn't that movie Breakthrough like a religious movie or something?
Yeah, so, super, super Christian.
Yeah, but wow, that was
but
a surprise.
Josh Lucas is in it and he's hot, so.
Oh, I saw him in a bar not that long ago in Harlem. Yeah.
I would have jumped him.
Oh, my. So what else was happening? So she was in awe of Vanity Fair. Who else? I know Madonna always does a party. Normally Elton John, but he won this year. So
yeah. Oh, that's actually, you're so right. I forget that Elton John does a really big after party.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that obviously Vanity Fair is like the one that everyone goes to, but there are other parties now, like Netflix throws one, Beyonce and Jay-Z throw one at the Chateau Marmont. So I think it's starting to like people hop to all the exclusive parties.
And Adele showing up looking totally different.
That's God, guys, she's lost 100 pounds.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That I cannot wait for this next album. Her voice is going to be fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, like, you think it's gonna be different with all that?
I think it's gonna be so much more beautiful than it was before. Because remember how, I mean, Adele's voice is perfection, but remember how she's having all those issues when she was doing her tour?
Right.
I don't think she'll have all those issues anymore. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Give me the new album now.
But real quick, did you guys notice, because some of the commercials I did see, I do have to give a shout out to ABC's two commercials about their own shows that I thought were hilarious. Did you see, and I'm not a fan, I don't watch it all, but The Bachelor, whoever the current Bachelor is.
Oh, yes.
Did you guys see that?
Oh, yeah, Peter. He's like, Peter Weber.
Oh, okay, yeah, he's like at the pottery wheel doing the whole Patrick Swayze shirtless thing and then all these women's hands and then Whoopi is there and he goes you in danger,
yeah,
boy.
You in danger.
I thought that was so cute. And then I also thought it was cute that American Idol did the whole like kind of movie
Almost
musical
famous.
Moment with Almost Famous, all them singing in the bus. It was kind of cheesy, of course, and like meh, but I did love that they like at least paid homage to that movie. I love Almost Famous, so it was fun to see a couple, you know, unique fun nods to movies throughout the night in the commercials, you know?
Yeah.
So that's it for award season. I mean, before we know it, it'll be time for Telluride in Toronto again in August and September. And then it seems like the season just picks up right from there and goes straight forward through February. And it just is one wild, exhausting ride. And we will be.
Do we know if they're going to do the Oscars again that this early?
I don't think they've announced yet.
Forward?
Yeah, I don't know. I am kind of sad. I kind of have the post-Oscars blues, guys. I don't know. Am I crazy?
Oh, I'm exhausted. I'm happy.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Now we have our Sunday nights back. Yeah.
All right, well, that's our episode, guys, for the week. Thank you so much for tuning in, listeners. Please go to addthistoyourlist.com to listen to past episodes. Follow us on social. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Mm-hmm. And leave us reviews on iTunes. We will shout you out. Please, please. That is our Oscar. If you go and say something so special about us, that is our equivalent of winning an Oscar.
We will give you a thank you speech. Yes.
Thank you to Greg, Allie, and Jay for all of your behind-the-scenes support to this podcast. And we will catch you all in about a week or so.
Yeah.
Toodles.
Yeah. Right. Bye.
Bye.